You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We are in Costa Rica today. So we had to tape this show a little bit earlier than we normally do, as in we're always freaking live. But we're live to tape, baby. All right. There's no editorialist. There's nothing, man. There's no safety net here at the Fantasy Sports Network. All we have is Andrew Reed in a Team England soccer cap, ready to rock and roll. But Bano's ready to go. It's week 7 already, man, of the CFL, which you know what that means. If it's week 7 of the CFL, it means the NFL season's rapidly approaching and the NFL preseason is here, man. We're breaking it down. We got the Dallas Cowboys and the Arizona Cardinals. I'm going to give you my first NFL picks of the year for tonight's Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. Let's just hope they don't paint the field a couple hours before the game again. Last year was freaking canceled. So Babano's going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about the preseason game, but we'll focus in on week 7 of the Canadian Football League. We're talking fantasy football bus with Matt Modica of the Fantasy Sports Network. CTM baseball isn't just baseball. Matt's a football guy as well. Fantasy football fever is in the air. NFL preseason set to kick off. It's a great time of the freaking year. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues.
Quarterback to receiver hookups. Running back depth analysis. Rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at RotoExperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's talk some CFL football with a man who'll be joining me in Costa Rica this weekend for the first ever IFBC. Babano will be part of the SBR Roundtable. I'll be speaking Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock Eastern. We encourage you to watch the event live at ifbc.live. But it's week 7 of the Canadian Football League, and a trip to Costa Rica doesn't stop the CFL. Let's bring in Babano, Ian Cameron. Babano, always a pleasure. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Morenci. Looking forward to the trip, of course. You're going to be speaking. You're going to hit it out of the park. I know it on Friday. My little bit that I'm doing at the conference is Saturday, the live roundtable show with the group that I usually do that show with every week at SBR Videos. That'll be a lot of fun. But you're speaking Friday. I'm speaking Saturday. So I'm going to have to keep my mind right a little bit longer when I'm down there than maybe you will be.
Well, you'll be able to go out on Thursday night. Like, you know, you could go out on the Thursday and then recover on the Friday. I'll take it easy on Thursday, and then once I'm done on Friday, you know, I'll be able to have a good time. Although I do have to check in and do Red Heat and Rage Radio. Fortunately, there's a 2-hour time difference, right? So
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's only
that's
6 o'clock.
That's a good time for that.
Yep. Yeah, it's only 6 o'clock in Costa Rica. So seven, you know, 7 o'clock, I'll start going hard. But I guess seven is the key number because we're into week 7 now of the CFL. It's another great week of action in week 6. It's been a real fun year of CFL football this year. The Bombers rallied back in the final minutes, down from double digits against the Montreal Alouettes. The Edmonton Eskimos, the league's only undefeated team, didn't really look all great for the most part in their first four games, but they really put it together. And, you know, they beat up on a very good BC Lion football team. Daron Carter made one of the best catches, like a backhand catch, man. This catch isn't getting the love that it deserved against the Argos. And, you know, the only game that really wasn't competitive, we'll say, was your Hamilton Tiger Cats, in which, whoa, man, it got ugly. And, you know, I teased the Stamps to the over last week, Babano. And I was a little bit worried. I'm like, well, I hope Hamilton can score because it's not going to get to the over. Well, I didn't have to worry about that. Calgary took care of the total on their own.
Yeah, they did. And this Hamilton situation, which I know we're going to get into when we talk about that game, it's really a disaster at this point. I mean, it doesn't get any worse or any much lower than losing 60-1. Now, we know Calgary's a great team, but that's still an absolute embarrassment, a debacle for this team. And then I read today that they're fighting with each other in practice. that there was a big scuffle that broke out at Hamilton practice in Calgary earlier today. Offense and defense getting into it. So the frustration is boiling over for this football team, and I'm not sure they're going to be all that ready to turn it around Friday night in Edmonton. Obviously, there are professionals. You'd expect pride to show up here for them to lay it all out there, but Hamilton can play as hard as they can for 60 minutes and still lose this game by 17 or more points. It's worth noting Hamilton's lost every road game this year by 17 or more points. Hard to trust them.
All right, so the Calgary Stampeders coming off the big 60-1 win. It's not going to be as easy against the Toronto Argonaut football team on Toronto's home field, although the Argos' home field is something to be desired, obviously, as far as how many people go to the games. But they generally play well at home. The Stamps are now 4-1-1 on the season after destroying the Hamilton Tiger Cats. They're 4-2 to the over on the year. Right now, but they did lose on the East Coast. They did lose to the Alouettes. The Argos are 3-3 on the season, but they're only 2-4 against the spread. They're 2-4 to the under. The Argos played on Saturday night, lost to the Riders, and of course the Stamps played on Saturday, so there's no travel advantage or disadvantage. You know, the Argos have played a lot recently, but I don't expect fatigue to be an issue in this game. What do you make of this game?
It's an interesting game. It's a tougher game because if you follow the Toronto Argonauts pattern of the way they've performed this season, this is supposed to be a straight up and against the spread victory for the Argos. That's been their mantra this season. Win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. That's been the pattern. 3-3 for this football team. Of course, beating Ottawa last Monday, tough turnaround for them playing in Saskatchewan. Ran out of gas, really, in that fourth quarter. I mean, that was a team that was playing on fumes, running on fumes in that fourth quarter. Saskatchewan able to pull away and win 38-27. Toronto didn't have enough in the tank to finish that football game. And now they're in the same spot.
Well, the score was a little deceptive, Beto. The game was freaking close until the final minutes, right?
Yeah.
It took, like, let's be real, Daron Carter made a miracle catch, too. the Argos were tired, fatigued, but I don't think they lost because of fatigue. I think they lost because the Saskatchewan Rough Rider wide receivers put on an epic clinic of hand display. That's what it came down to.
The catch was incredible. I mean, for the people that say there's no talent in the CFL, shut up about that, will you please? I mean, watch a catch like that and then tell me there's no talent in this league. Give me a break. But it was a fantastic catch by Daron Carter, absolutely outstanding. It should be on every highlight reel. It should be on SportsCenter. You know, for a long time to come, it was an outstanding catch. Kevin Glenn just threw it up there. It's something he should do more often, to be honest with you, with Daron Carter, a guy of that talent and that capable of a receiver. Just throw the ball up there. Make it a 50-50 ball. He's going to have a chance to come down with it more often than not, and he sure did there. That was a phenomenal one-handed catch. You know, Toronto now back home. They're in the same spot Ottawa was in last Monday, Gabe. They're playing third game in 10 days. It's a tough spot. We'll see what the Argos have in them. Calgary, though, it's a little questionable spot for them. I mean, they just came off pasting Hamilton, but they did suffer a couple of key injuries on offense. Rob Cote, the fullback, out. Kamar Jordan, one of their top receivers. He's on the six-game injured list. He got hurt in that game against Hamilton. So it wasn't all good news, even though the Stampeders waxed the Ticats on Saturday. A couple injuries on offense that they suffered heading into that game. It's a tough one, but the pattern says bet Toronto. I mean, they've been off a loss. They've won straight up and against the spread every time. The problem is I don't like this scheduling spot for them. Third game in 10 days is very tough.
All right, so the Hamilton Tiger Cats, they stay in the province of Alberta. They get the Edmonton Eskimos this week. The Eskimos are rolling right now. You know, they're 5-0 straight up, but they are just 2-2-1 against the number. It's definitely a flat spot for the Edmonton Eskimos coming off that big emotional win over the BC Lions. You mentioned the Ticats are fighting with each other. That's not a bad thing at this point, Babano. You know, they need some sort of spark. If they weren't fighting with each other, I think it would be a bigger problem, actually. At least they're showing some emotion. We can't forget, it was a couple of weeks ago that the Ticats were up on Edmonton. They had Edmonton down. They just collapsed. That's the closest they came to winning all year, and they got a push. That's the thing with the Cats. They're 0-5 on the year. They're 0-4-1 against the point spread. But they did play their best game of the year against this Edmonton team. I loved Edmonton against BC last week. I thought they were due for a breakout game. They're a damn good football team, Edmonton. But this does have letdown written all over it. But like you said, it's freaking hard to trust a team that's 0-4-1 against the spread that's coming off a 60-1 loss. It really is.
It is. The way I see this game is simple. If you like Edmonton, lay the points. Don't hesitate, because if they're winning this game, they're romping. They're rolling, as far as I'm concerned. That's what's going to happen. Hamilton's lost every road game, 0-3 straight up and against the spread on the road. They've lost by 17 or more points at Toronto, at Saskatchewan, at Calgary. They've been non-competitive on the road. I don't trust them here. If pride shows up, and you have to expect it will somehow, you'll get a hard effort for Hamilton for 60 minutes, but doesn't mean that's enough with a bad football team to get inside this number right now. And Edmonton, as you said, they finally played their best game of the season last week against BC. I'm not laying the points with Edmonton either. It's going to be a pass for me in this game. I do say this, if you like Hamilton, if you think there's a shred of pride that and maybe Edmonton takes them lightly, be gutsy. Take Hamilton money line, because I think if they're going to do anything in this game, they're going to stun the world and win. I think if they lose, they're going to lose big.
They're plus 650 on the money line, so you're getting plus 650. I think the over, like you said, it's a tough game. Logic says Edmonton, but the CFL's not a logical league. It's a tough one, but it takes balls of steel, but it is Steel City with the Hamilton Tiger Cats to pull the trigger on the Tie Cats. The total's 55.5. I got to lean to the over in that game. Now, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Ottawa Red Blacks, this is an interesting game. And, you know, the Red Blacks deserve better, Babano. The Red Blacks deserve better. See some big line movement, though. Last night, when I was looking at the numbers and I was putting all my CFL stuff together, the Red Blacks were laying 3. Now I see the Bombers are laying 1 in this football game. The total's 58.
It's an interesting, and you know what? If you believe in a good spot versus a bad spot, you believe in this being a good spot for Ottawa and this being a bad spot for Winnipeg. I mean, if you're the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, you basically committed robbery last week against the Montreal Alouettes. I mean, that was just an incredible collapse by Montreal. They were way too passive on defense. I mean, Noel Thorpe is a good defensive coordinator for Montreal, but how he allowed that defense to be as passive as they were and let Winnipeg just march the ball so easily down the field when they were up by 12 with about a minute to go is inexcusable in my mind. You had to at least show a little bit more pressure on Matt Nichols. Sure enough, Winnipeg, after that quick, and I mean quick touchdown to get it to a one-score game, they recover the onside kick and then move down the field and punch it in on the very final
you're leaving out,
play
Babano,
of the game.
You're leaving out the fact they did get pressure. They got two rough in the passer penalties in the last minute. That aided and abetted. I agree with you. You know, the prevent defense will just prevent you from winning. But, you know, the Owls, they got to Nichols. That was the problem. They got to him too late twice, you know. Although one of those calls was Bush League, like Nick Lewis brought up the other day. That, you know, Nichols sort of played that one of them up, but you know, one of the dudes on the Alouettes, I don't know who it was, he freaking smoked Nichols. And, you know, I was like, that was a pretty stupid thing to do. It was a real collapse, man. And
it was
an epic collapse. It is what it is. But listen, the Bombers' offense is an explosive one. They're 3-2 on the season right now. They're a dangerous football team. You know, they're a confident team. They have a very good quarterback in Nichols. They're 4-1 to the over. The Bombers' last three games have all been high scoring. They put up 33 or more points in 3 consecutive games, the Bombers. And the Red Blacks won 4-1, as you know, Babano. Their problem's been the offense, actually. But what's amazing about this, the Red Blacks are actually 5-1 against the spread guys this year. The Red Blacks are making money if you bet on them. And, you know, their 4 losses are combined 10 points. They've been in every game. They're 2-4 to the under. They can't score. They have 4 straight unders since the first 2 games against the Calgary Stampeders. But like you said, this is a good spot. The Red Blacks are rested. They're pissed off. I didn't think the Red Blacks were as good as people thought they were when they came into the year. You know, that was kind of a fluke Grey Cup run last year. But at the same point in time, they're not as bad as their 1-4-1 record indicates. They're still a decent team. I think they win this game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Winnipeg celebrated that comeback win, miraculous as it was, like a Grey Cup win. I mean, they were celebrating on the field, you know, the crowd going nuts. I think this is a little bit of a letdown. And if Ottawa's going to finally put it together and play an A game, this is going to be the spot. They've been off since last Monday, nearly a week and a half, over a week and a half to rest, practice, get healthy, get some injured guys back. I expect Trevor Harris in this Ottawa offense to have a breakout night here against a bad Winnipeg defense, a defense that could be without their best cornerback, TJ Heath. He got injured last week. From what I've read, he's not practicing this week. If they lose him in the secondary, he doesn't play. It's bad news for a Winnipeg defense that has been awful the last 2 weeks against BC and Montreal. Both of those teams moved the ball up and down against them. I think this is Ottawa's spot and Ottawa's game.
And finally, we've got the Saskatchewan Roughriders getting 5.5 against the BC Lions. See if there's been any line. No line movement. Total's 56. In this football game. So the totals come down a half a point. 5.5 and 56. The Riders coming off that huge win against the Argos. So, you know, the Riders, they had tough luck earlier. And I think the kicker, I swear, Bano, I think the only two kicks that guy's missed all year cost them the first two games of the year. Because I saw the other day when he lined up for a kick and he made it, they were like, yeah, he's 10 for 12 on the season. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, man, like he made every one since he cost them the tap. He cost them two games earlier in the year. But you mentioned throwing the ball up to Daron Carter. Glenn Suter brought it up during the game. He's a good Rider insider, obviously. Great bro. I like Suter. I think he's the best one of the analysts, actually. I'm a big Suter fan. And Suter brought it up. He said, you got to get Daron Carter involved here a little bit more. He was getting open. He was in one-on-one situations. Glenn wasn't putting it up to him. But that's the thing with Kevin Glenn. You know, last week, 4 touchdown passes, no interceptions, man. A guy looks like an elite quarterback. But he has a hard time stringing performances like that together over the years. And sometimes he'll be great in the first half and crap in the second half or vice versa, etc. But Saskatchewan's offense is starting to come alive a little bit. And we've seen from the first game that we watched together, Babano, to the last BC Lion game, the Lions secondary just gives up big chunks. So to me, you know, this is the key. Can the Riders go in there and can Kevin Glenn make plays through the air? Because I think that the receivers will get open. It's up to Glenn to do it. And anybody that follows the CFL knows, you know, the Riders play BC pretty tough, actually. And Rider fans always travel to Vancouver for this game. It's going to be an electric game.
It is a really interesting one, but I'm leaning more toward laying the points with BC than taking Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan on the road this year offensively has been a disaster, to be honest. 16 points in a loss at Montreal, 10 points in a loss at Calgary. They've been much better at home. They're going to have to show it to me on the road first. And the BC Lions, you know, when you get these teams like Calgary and BC, top teams in the league off a loss, I don't really look to bet against them. I mean, you look at BC since the start of last season, off a regular season loss in their next game, they're 6-1 straight up and against the spread. That's pretty damn good. Yeah. That's a good track record of a good team responding to a bad performance.
I can't argue with that, but Ben, I would argue the BC is one of the best teams in the league, though. Yeah, they're not Edmonton or Calgary. They're tier two. You know what I mean?
They're good. They're really good when they're all healthy, but that secondary is banged up. That's a concern right now. Is Ronnie Yell going to play? Is Parker going to play? They lost TJ Lee in that secondary last week against Edmonton. I think when they're healthy on defense, especially in that secondary, they're as good talent-wise or can compete with Calgary and Edmonton. But when they're banged up in the secondary, that's a problem. But it still may not be enough for Saskatchewan to be able to get the job done in this particular spot. I'd still lean a little bit to BC. Hopefully they get a couple of these guys back in the secondary. By the way, quarterback-wise for BC, no update yet whether Jennings returns. There was talk early in the week that he might be ready to return, but it's far from a certain thing. So it's still up in the air whether we see Jennings or Lule on the field for BC on Saturday.
Yeah, and if Jennings comes back, people love Jennings so much, the number would probably go up a little bit. Maybe it would get to 7 or something like that. That's the thing with the CFL, though, guys. If you're not an experienced CFL better, there really are no key numbers. It's not like the NFL. Like, you know, the threes and the sevens, etc. There's a few, you know, we mentioned a Hamilton-Edmonton game earlier in the year. That was a three-point game. But there's a lot of one-point games and two-point games. And there's awkwardness with the scores. So the key numbers, you know, 5.5, 6, 7, I don't know how much of a difference it really makes. Like Babana was saying about the Ticats and the Eskimos. The Riders either played them real tough and it comes down to the wire or they get massacred. So, like, it's a tough game, that one. I don't really trust either of them in this spot, to be honest with you. It feels like to me, if you take BC, it's one of those, I can't believe I trusted BC laying the point deals. And if you take the Riders, it's like, oh, God, can't believe I only got 5.5 here.
A Saskatchewan team that offensively on the road has been anemic this season. They've been awful on offense on the road. Kevin Glenn's been terrible on the road, yet he's been good at home. So he's got to put it together on the road. This is a big game for Saskatchewan. If they're going to make anything of this season, they got to give a halfway decent performance, particularly on the offensive side of the football on the road against a good team.
Well, we saw the Alouettes' offense was putrid. They went on the road last week and absolutely lit it up. I don't know how they managed to lose that game. But they absolutely lit it up. It'll be interesting to see if Saskatchewan, because like you said, their offense is pretty good at home. You know, they're starting to put it together at home. I mean, they lost that season opener deal against Winnipeg because of Kapinga. But their offense is starting to click a little bit right now. They've got talent, man. They've got some skill wide receivers that played in the NFL and stuff. Like Roosevelt, Naaman Roosevelt's a good wide receiver, too.
Keep an eye on Caleb Hawley. Caleb Hawley returned from injury for Saskatchewan last week. He's a receiver that I think's got the potential to make some noise and be productive for them, too.
Yeah, they've got talent. Cameron Marshall's a good running back. Like, to me, it's just Kevin Glenn and the consistency situation. All right, Babano, so before we get you out of here, the Dallas Cowboys and the Arizona Cardinals are throwing down Hall of Fame game. Are you getting in on this game, or are you just going to sit back and watch?
I'm not as inclined to take Arizona as I was about a couple of days ago. Bruce Arians coming out today and saying that none of his starters are going to play Thursday. None of them. None at all whatsoever. He's looking at Trevor Knight, Texas A&M / Oklahoma quarterback, playing the entire second half. That means a rookie quarterback getting his first NFL snaps in game action, going to play the entire second half here for the Arizona Cardinals in this Hall of Fame game. I was initially looking at the zone aside because I thought their quarterback rotation was okay. A little bit put off by that. That's probably a game I stay away from.
Yeah, Blaine Gabbert playing the entire first half, though. You have an NFL quality starter. Well, I use the term loosely, but you know what I mean? Well, my point is, you know, in the preseason, you're always looking for that edge in which a guy that has seen number one defenses, Babano, right? A guy that's seen number one defenses frequently. I mean, listen, say what you will about Gabbert, but the guy started quite a few games in his life in the NFL. So he's seen elite guys come and trying to take his head off. It'll be a little bit easier. I don't freak out about the starter thing only because the starters only generally play one series in this game anyways, or in the first preseason game. But you're right. The fact that Stanton's out too, that's a little bit of a disadvantage right there.
That's the one that
would have been nice
me,
to have
that's
Stanton
really the one
and
that bothers me,
Gabbert.
Yep.
Stanton and Gabbert definitely would have been a nice 1-2 punch.
I agree. I think that's what bothers me more, Stanton not seeing any of the field whatsoever. And yes, you would expect Gabbert, you know, as a guy that's had more than a handful of starts now in the National Football League, to be able to make some plays here against, you know, potentially backups once they get into the second quarter on the defensive side for Dallas. But we are still talking about Blaine Gabbert. However, if he's finally going to do something and actually make some things happen, you would think it's in this kind of spot, the very first preseason game when starters are going to see the field at a minimal amount.
We'll break this game down in its entirety after Matt Modica joins us. Babano, it's always a pleasure, my man. We'll see you in Costa Rica.
Yeah, one last thing. Probably wouldn't surprise me to see that game, by the way, stay under the total. I mean, Hall of Fame unders, usually you do pretty good with that. Yeah, looking forward to it, Gabe. We'll see you in Costa Rica this weekend. Good luck to all our viewers.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame game, 4-1 to the under in the last five years. We'll take a quick break. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues.
Ezekiel Elliott, Carl Anthony Towns, Corey Seager. Those are the rookies of the year, much like the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The fastest growing fantasy sports network on radio is completely free, 24/7. Listen to us live at fntsy.com/radio or download the app right now in the Google Play Store or on iTunes.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does the countdown to fantasy football season. If you're a hardcore fantasy player, there, you know, you can make money playing in the preseason, but we're going to have to wait till next week when all the games start. But fantasy football fever is definitely in the air right now. Last week at the network on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network and television networks, it was Fantasy Sleeper Week. This week, it's Fantasy Bust Week, and I'm not talking about Pamela Anderson's rack We're talking about running backs and wide receivers and potentially quarterbacks, tight ends that could disappoint or let people down. Earlier in the week, I did a bust segment with Tony Cincata, and I said I think Melvin Gordon, not a bust, but being drafted too high, and I like guys better than him that are being drafted after him. I said I think Marshawn Lynch could be letting a lot of people down. ADP 10, way too high. Let's bring in Matt Modica right now. CTM Baseball doesn't just do baseball. You got to start another Twitter, CTM Football, Matt. Matt Modica joins us. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Gabe. Happy to be with you here this afternoon. And, I've been doing I did my first high-stakes draft over at the NFFC on May 23rd, and it's finally August 1st. And we're getting ever so close.
That's crazy, man. You're doing high stakes. I hope you didn't take Mike Williams, right? From
No. I was taking Tyrell Williams even when Mike Williams was going ahead of him. I didn't understand that.
You know what? Tyrell Williams is actually one of my sleepers as well. That was one of the sleepers that I gave. I don't know if he's a sleeper. It seems like everybody loves him. But let's jump in and talk some fantasy football right now. Let's start off with a guy actually in your backyard in Paul Perkins that a lot of people like coming into this year. Man, I don't. And when I did my New York Giant team preview, I brought up the fact I just don't understand for the life of me why the Giants refuse to get a solid legitimate number one back. And no disrespect to Paul Perkins, but Perkins is the type of guy I want coming in on third down, second and third downs, etc., catching some passes out of the backfield. You know, the Giants have a great defense. They have a great stable of wide receivers. They have a good offensive line. You've got Eli Manning. Why not just get a running back and put yourself over the top? I don't get it, Matt. And to me, Paul Perkins is not a number one running back.
You know what, Gabe? I agree with you. I think Perkins could be a good NFL player, but I don't foresee him as a lead back, at least not right now, and especially not with the Giants. This is a team that wants to spread it out, go three wide, even four wide sometimes. And look, the Giants have 11 rushing touchdowns over the last two seasons. That's terrible. I think the average team averages just over 10 rushing touchdowns a season. So, going to the Giants for your running game is a really tough task. And if I'm going to own any Giants running back, it's probably going to be Shane Vereen.
You know what's interesting about the Giants, too, as you mentioned, it's not a team that, like, I don't think it's a team that plans on running the ball too much. You know, they bring in Brandon Marshall. You didn't need Brandon Marshall. You bring in Brandon Marshall. They draft a tight end, Like, it's pretty clear this isn't a team that's, we're committed to the run. We really need to run the ball. We really need to run the ball more. For the record, right now, Perkins, his ADP's 33, 80th overall right now. But, I'm looking 32 ADP's Derrick Henry, and I think Derrick Henry's going to start to cut into Murray's touches a little bit this year. I think Henry's too good not to get more involved into the offense, actually. I know we're talking bust, but I'm going to throw it out there. I think Derrick Henry, I'm not saying you put him on your team, but he could be a nice DFS steal on a Sunday every now and then, I tell you.
Yeah, Henry sometimes could be a flex option possibly, but I'm kind of the opposite. I still think they're going to stay with Murray. I think they're going to try, Murray's been a top three running back. A top seven running back three of the last 4 years in fantasy. He's a beast. He knows how to get in the end zone, and he catches a ton of passes. I do like Henry's talent, but I think we're maybe 1 year away from seeing it realized. And like you said, possibly in that DFS, where it's just an insane matchup for the Titans, then I go that route.
You know what's interesting? I see Eddie Lacy is right here, two spots before Paul Perkins, ADP 31. And Eddie Lacy, of course, now with Seattle, looks like, they're going to be, they've got a running back by committee going there. We've got CJ Procise. We've got Rawls there. You've got Lacy there. You've got some guys, that collectively might be able to put some numbers up, but pretty tough for fantasy purposes. What do you make of the Seattle guys? Because we're talking about teams that want to commit to the run. Pete Carroll has really been adamant about this, Matt, in the offseason. about, you know, their offensive line struggles. They have a young offensive line, and they're the same guys back. Pro Football Focus has rated the Seahawks' offensive line as the worst offensive line in the league. Pete Carroll says that his line isn't as bad as they looked last year. You know, they were put in tough situations because they didn't run the football. They need to run the football more to make everybody look better, so to speak. So Carroll wants to get back to running the football. The question is, which one of those guys is going to be the guy to do it the most?
You know what? I think Eddie Lacy landed in the perfect spot for him. He's not a guy that I'm going out of my way to get. If he falls to me at the right price, then yes. But the guy that I really like, especially in the PPR format, I think he's got loads of talent, is CJ Procise. I know he doesn't have the, you know, the overall workload and stuff. He'll be more of the receiving back. But I think this kid's got some really nice talent. He's going probably a couple of rounds after Lacy, and he's a guy that I'm actually targeting.
All right, so let's talk about Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill and the Kansas City Chiefs. What do you make of Tyreek Hill?
I mean, I love watching kid. I mean, I even remember last year when I was driving back to the city, I had the Sunday night game on the radio, and he returned the kick, and Kevin Harlan was calling it, and it was sounded so awesome, and I couldn't wait to see it. But here's the problem. One, you got Alex Smith as your quarterback. We see Tyreek Hill even running down the field wide open. He don't get the ball thrown to him. Number two, is he a true number one receiver? I'm skeptical. Maybe at some point. The other thing is, you know, he had three return touchdowns last year. You know, usually you get one or so. I mean, three is a lot in one season. He had three rushing touchdowns last year. Five touchdowns of 68 yards or more. I mean, you're just asking a lot. And he only had two games where he had 80 yards or more receiving. So, I mean, I don't know. If he's my flex option, yeah, I'm happy with that. But he's got to probably fall to a price where I'm not going to own him.
And what's insane, you look, I think this is our first bust that we can define. Because honestly, we're talking about Paul Perkins. Yeah, people are, you know, when you're talking about a guy ADP 31, 32, 33, it's hard to call somebody a bust. But as far as Tyreek Hill is concerned, I mean, I'm looking at the guys that are around him right now, and I'd much rather have Crabtree than a Tyreek Hill. I'd rather have a Jarvis Landry than Tyreek Hill. I'd rather have Julian Edelman, even with the acquisition of Brandon Cooks and the return of Gronkowski. Hell, Golden Tate. Golden Tate is a PPR monster and machine. There's a sleeper and an underrated guy right there.
Oh, yeah, I put you on Golden Tate.
Yeah, Golden Tate.
He's a lock for 90, probably 100 this year.
You know, the thing with Golden Tate is, too, people don't talk about him, but this is off the top of my head, so, you know, pardon me if I stumble a bit on this, but I think he's got the fifth most catches in the last 3 years, actually. You've got Odell Beckham, Julio Jones. It was Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, Jordy Nelson, and there was Demaryius Thomas. Next to those four guys, he has the most catches in the last 3 years in the NFL.
Hey, listen, look, the thing, too, is if I'm going to take a shot on a receiver at where Hill's going, I'll take the gamble on Martavis Bryant. And I'm probably not drafting Martavis Bryant until he probably slips another round, which I don't know if that's going to happen. But I'd rather take – I mean, Martavis Bryant is pretty damn prolific as a receiver. It's been a while since we've seen him on the field, and he's got his own issues. But I don't know. It's just you're asking a lot taking Hill. You're asking him to be – you need him to hit these home runs consistently.
That's a good point that you raised. All right, let's talk about a quarterback right now. And Raider fans not going to like this one. You've got Derek Carr on your potential bust list, quarterback ADP 8. And I'll tell you one thing about Derek Carr. To me, this is where reality and fantasy sort of separate from each other, is the fact that Derek Carr – is a great young quarterback. I think the guy's a stud. I think he's a winner. I think he's good in the huddle. There's nothing not to like about Carr's game. But I think from a fantasy standpoint, he's slightly overrated. I mean, you look at the numbers that he puts up compared to some of the other guys. You know, you look like a Derek Carr compared to like our guy, Tyrod Taylor. You know what I mean? Like Tyrod Taylor puts big-ass fantasy numbers up, but, hey, Tyrod sucks. Hey, Tyrod's ADP you know, 16, 17. Ooh, Derek Carr, one of the stud quarterbacks in the NFL. The fact is, Derek Carr doesn't put Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers' numbers up. He doesn't.
Yeah, you know what? I think you nailed it. And it's, look, as an NFL quarterback, I love Carr. Wish he was, you know, on the Bills. You know, they have a bright future with him. He is a gamer. I really love watching him play the game. But for everything you said, for fantasy purposes, I'm seeing, like you said, he was right, quarterback 8. You know, I'm seeing people reaching up for this guy when I don't think you got to do it. If Marshawn Lynch is going to stay healthy on this team, he's going to get rushing touchdowns. Latavius Murray had a dozen rushing touchdowns last season, and Latavius Murray isn't that good. So you have Beast Mode coming to Oakland. You know, it's going to cap his upside too. And the Raiders also, he's had the games he struggled is against the Chiefs and the Broncos. So that's 4 games right there. And the Chargers defense is improving. So he's got a tough division that he's in. But as an NFL quarterback, I love him. Up and coming, stud, young quarterback. Fantasy, as other guys I'm going to take ahead of him.
Sleeper quarterbacks that I gave earlier in the week or last week, Carson Palmer. I'm a big Carson Palmer fan this year.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think he's going to bounce back in a big way. And another guy, you know, Carson Palmer's ADP 20, 150 overall. Carson Wentz, 19, 134. And, you know, Carson Wentz, I think people are very, very reluctant to pull the trigger on this guy. But if you look at the weapons that he has, and a very similar situation, Matt, to the New York Giant situation that we were talking about. Yeah, I know they have LeGarrette Blount in there. But I don't think LeGarrette Blount's getting the ball 22 times a game. I think they're going to try to use him as a battering ram in the red zone. They're going to be throwing the football, man. You know, you bring it. They didn't pay Alshon Jeffrey not to throw him the ball. And you know what? Jordan Matthews, people bitch about him, but he's pretty good, actually. And I think when the pressure's taken off of him now, and Jeffrey's going to have the top guy on him, you have Torrey Smith, who's fast as hell. Suddenly, Aguilar is going to have this pressure. Matthews is going to have this pressure. I like the tight ends, and I like Zach Ertz. I'm telling you, man, Carson Wentz has a lot of freaking weapons. Every time he looks up, somebody's going to be open, dude.
Yeah, in the battle of the Carsons, Palmer versus Wentz, I'm going to take Palmer. Look at the last 2 seasons, over 60 touchdowns, over 8,500 yards passing. Look, the first month of the season was a train wreck for Carson Palmer. His final 10 games, half of them he threw for over 300 yards. I think he averaged like 287, 2 touchdowns and a pick. This is a guy one season removed from 35 touchdowns and 4,500 yards. He's still got Fitzgerald. The wild card for that team is John Brown. Is John Brown able to stay healthy? I mean, he's still got David Johnson. He can do a drop-off past 5 yards. Johnson can take it to the house.
Yeah.
So the late-round value, I'm with you on Carson Palmer.
That's the thing with Carson Palmer. And, you know, his arm was a little dead last year and flat. He started taking Wednesdays off, and it made the difference. As you mentioned, down the stretch, last 5 games, 11 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. And then in the offseason, he didn't throw the football hardly at all this year. And he said his arm feels so much better right now. And Bruce Arians going to continue this theme. He's going to throw the ball less all year long during practice. They don't want him practicing on Wednesdays anymore. And I tell you, his ball's got a zip. He nearly broke David Johnson's finger. He's throwing it so hard right now. So, yeah, we've only got a minute left here, Matt. So it was great catching up with you, talking some fantasy football. Hopefully our Buffalo Bills can put it together this year and surprise some people. But tell you what, fantasy players, man, they're all over. They're loving LeSean McCoy this year, aren't they?
That they are. They are, you know, Shady's rising up draft boards. He's, you know, the 4th running back for most people. I'm going to give you one word of advice. Take Watkins this year. I know you got – I know he screwed you last year. Take Watkins this year.
Wow, it's been actually 3 years, 2 years for real. Like last year, I thought like this year, no, it won't happen again. You know what I mean? Like I was like, no, he's gonna, this is the year he breaks out. See, you're telling me, you're saying do it. You're saying Sammy Watkins.
Do it. He's gonna win championships from people that take him anywhere mid 3rd round later. He's too talented. There's so many targets there. He's the only proven receiver on that team, and he's got top 5 potential in the wide receiver position.
Matt Modica. Always a pleasure, Matt.
You got it. Thanks, Gabe.
There's Matt Modica with us. Wow. You know I'm going to end up doing it too, huh? Sammy Watkins has cost me like tens of thousands of dollars, though. Like, I used to defend the kid, but I can't lie. I'm starting to get a little surly towards him. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the first NFL preseason game of the year.
Many fantasy football players are focusing on their upcoming drafts later this summer. But the smart fantasy owner knows there's another big draft before the one where you pick the players. The first step in building a winner for the 2017 season is to draft the best team of experts for your preseason prep. So make the right selection and pick the squad at rotoexperts.com by purchasing the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. The Roto Experts roster features FSWA inaugural Hall of Famer and former Fantasy Football Writer of the Year Scott Engel, nationally acclaimed top ranker Jake Seeley, 2015 and 16 FSWA award winners Bobby McMahon and Brandon Murchison, and many more analysis with impressive stats. They bring you a draft package bursting with all-pro analysis and in-season coverage that'll guide you to title glory. So pick the team to help you build the right team. Make your first important selection of the 2017 season now and get the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package from rotoexperts.com. Be sure to enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for your discount.
Well, the wait is finally over, boys. The National Football League preseason is set to kick off. It's the Hall of Fame game, normally on Sunday, but it's on Thursday this year. Now, I've warned you guys, though, and as much as I've told you that I love betting on the preseason, it doesn't mean that you go crazy on every preseason game, and specifically, doesn't mean you go crazy on this preseason game. You know, the Hall of Fame game is a unique football game. It's more about the Hall of Famers that are being inducted, and we'll get to that in a second, than it is the actual teams on the field. These teams haven't been in camp for very long. You know, the Cowboys opened up camp last Monday, right? The day they booted Lucky Whitehead the next day or whatever it was. So, and same with Arizona. So they're really not ready to play a football game, and that's the reason why the Arizona Cardinals have stated that, you know what, we're not even going to play any of our starters at all. A lot has been made about this, and there's even been live movement, but I think that's stupid. If Carson Palmer and David Johnson would have played in this game, they would have played like three plays. Like, they literally would have played the first series. You know, so they either would have went down the field and scored or not, and oftentimes it's a or not. So I don't really make all that much about it. And the Dallas Cowboys haven't announced that their starters aren't going to play, but basically the Cowboys, they're not starting. They're not playing any of their starters either for the most part. Now let's just hope that they don't paint the field an hour before kickoff again. Dumb jackasses. Like last year, we actually had to cancel the game. We were all excited for football. They had to cancel the game last year. Now, Jerry Jones is being inducted into the Hall of Fame this weekend. And a lot of people are saying that that's the reason Elliott hasn't been suspended yet. They don't want to suspend Elliott right now because, you know, you don't want Jerry Jones to be overshadowed. What do you think about the Elliott suspension? Something to keep your eye on next week. If you're wondering, well, what about the Cardinals? Why are the Cardinals there? Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner's being inducted into the Hall of Fame. The Dallas Cowboys are one-point favorites in this football game. The total is 35. Blaine Gabbert, of course. A lot of talk about Gabbert signing there instead of Colin Kaepernick, except Blaine Gabbert, you know, didn't want the money that Kaepernick wanted. I like Blaine Gabbert. As a preseason quarterback, this is the exact type of angle that we're looking for. Blaine Gabbert is a guy that's played against number one defenses. He's been a starter in the National Football League. Not a good one, but he's been one. He's played in 43 career National Football League games. He's going to be playing against extremely vanilla defenses and raw rookie players and journeyman players, etc. I think it sets up very favorably for Blaine Gabbert in the first half. Former Oklahoma Sooner and Texas A&M Aggie Trevor Knight will take over. He's going to play the entire second half. So it's basically they're battling for the third string position. Knight probably ends up on a practice roster. Arians is pretty good with quarterbacks, so Arians sees something in this Trevor Knight kid. Trevor Knight was really killing it when he was at Oklahoma, but he got cursed by Katy Perry. Remember, Katy Perry went on College Game Day and said she wanted to duel him and date him and stuff, and he had a horrible game. He got a concussion. His career fell apart. I think his girlfriend split. He ended up transferring to Texas A&M. Now, where's Katy Perry now, hey, Trevor? Nowhere. So, yeah, Trevor Knight's going to get his opportunity here. Bruce Arians, 8-7-1 against the spread in the preseason as coach of the Arizona Cardinals. But this is interesting. Arians is 5-1-1 against the spread when getting points in the preseason. And we're getting a point. He's an underdog. Jason Garrett, just 9-16 straight up in the preseason. He doesn't care about preseason games. He never has. And the fact is, he's even worse against the spread, 8-16-1 in the preseason for the Dallas Cowboys. Draft pick Ryan Switzer, he's not playing in a game. Jordan Lewis, another draft pick, he's not playing in a game. Cowboys didn't bring a bunch of rookies as well. So I don't really know what the Cowboys' approach to this football game is. I know at the quarterback position, they have an interesting battle going on. Now, Kellen Moore is the backup to Dak Prescott. Yet, I don't think they're fully committed or sold that Kellen Moore is actually the guy. So they brought in Luke McCown. So it's going to be a little bit of a battle between Kellen Moore and Luke McCown. It's not a bad starting quarterback situation for a preseason football game. But with that being stated, McCown just got signed the other day because Zach Dyson got hurt. And you also have Cooper Rush, a kid out of Central Michigan. I know this quarterback pretty well. He's a pretty good quarterback, but he's going to struggle in this situation. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a hell of a lot of Cooper Rush in this football game a little bit later on in the game. The total is 35 points in this game, and it feels a little bit low, 35 points. But the fact of the matter is these guys play extremely vanilla. It's all about – it's just a glorified practice, really. Nobody's doing anything crazy. The only way these games go over the number in the Hall of Fame game is if the really bad quarterbacks, the rookie guys – like, you know, fumble the ball on the two-yard line, throw a pick six, et cetera. But for the most part, there's just a lot of running, and the clock just ticks. Four of the last five Hall of Fame games have gone under the number, all right? 4-1 to the under. So there's a little bit of value here, almost just blindly betting on the under. I'm going to be betting on the under here. Now, like I told you guys, I love betting on preseason football, and there's advantages. Even in this game, look, Bruce Arians basically told you his game plan coming into this and told you his damn roster. He's not going to do that in a regular season. But the Hall of Fame game is a little bit trickier than the other one, so proceed with caution. Don't go crazy. Don't go crazy in this game. We're going to have some plays of the day in this game for you before we're done. And then next week, we have a full slate of NFL preseason games, and we have a lot of great trends as far as coaches and how they do in the preseason. Like I said, look, Bruce Arians is 5-1-1 against the spread as an underdog. Meanwhile, we got Jason Garrett, 8-16-1 in his career overall against the spread in the preseason. Could be a tumultuous preseason in the Big D. Not to mention, they're going to about to set an NFL record and have six guys suspended at once, but that's another story. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Well, it's time for our plays of the day. The wait is over. The NFL is back. Now, I've told you guys a lot recently that I think there's a lot of value to betting on the preseason. There isn't a lot of value to betting on the Hall of Fame game, all right? The Hall of Fame game is an exhibition in its truest form, in which you've already heard the Arizona Cardinals say, we're not playing our starters at all, like at all, at all, at all. Kind of upsetting, man. It's the Hall of Fame game. If you're doing the game, play the damn game. I'm not saying play the starters for four quarters, but nevertheless, it makes it a little tricky to cap. Dallas Cowboys don't seem to care. Jason Garrett is a horrible preseason coach, right? He's 9-16 in his career against the spread in the preseason. Bruce Arians is 5-1-1 when getting points. You know what? I like the Arizona Cardinals to get it done here. I like the Arizona Cardinals. Plus the 1 point for the last five Hall of Fame games have gone under the number, and I'd be surprised if this game was a track meet as well. So give me the Cards and give me the under for our first NFL picks of the year. CFL, we got some CFL action on the board this evening. The Calgary Stampeders are better than the Toronto Argonauts, but I'm in no hurry to lay five on the road. Give me the Boatmen, Toronto Argonauts, plus five. I like the over 54.5, and you knew we weren't going to end the plays of the day without a teaser, right? Give me the Toronto Argonauts 7-point teaser up to plus 12 and then over 47.5. Argos tease to the over. I really like that one. May the winners be yours.